There should be, see, it says this meeting is being recorded, and you put got it or leave the meeting.
Right.
So you should all have that. That's the button we were talking about. Okay.
And then you're going to mute everyone, Marianne?
I am.
Okay, perfect. So welcome to Women Explore. This is our lecture and discussion forum. And we are in the middle of our 2022 spring series called Friendship, Distraction, Hardiness, the Complexity of This Moment. And so before we go any farther, we're just going to ask everyone to take down their noises in their environment. Now, mostly we ask people to be muted, except if you're speaking. And you might even want to put it on speaker view when Mary Margaret does her focus. But please be aware of the sounds that are in your environment and turn them down or turn them off, or so that they are not interruptions for us. And we ask you to disconnect from your phones while we're meeting so that we are just sharing amongst ourselves and the richness that is there without other input coming in. We try to present things and have discussions that are thoughtful and original and provocative. And we do ask that you keep in mind when we're having discussions just to listen with open hearts and open minds. And we're here together in this new kind of series we've created this term to really stretch ourselves and explore and perhaps even be changed, and to enter, have the opportunity to enter into deeper discussions so that we can maybe take new steps or have new understandings. So this is our intention for this roundtable series. And today is a roundtable version of Driven by Distraction. That's the name of a book of distraction and right relationship. So how did this series come about? Well, I'm sorry. First, I left something out, reflections and our schedule for next week. So always we start at 10 o'clock, if you would like, with something we call reflections. We get together from 10 to 11. And we talk about something that's happened in our week, something maybe a response to what's happening out in the world or in our own personal lives. And then we talk about our reflections from the week before, what we learned, what we've put into practice, what we enjoyed about the lecture the week before and the whole day the week before. And then we start with a welcome and a focus on all of our weeks together. And this week is our roundtable discussion week. So yeah, last week we had a lecture from Camp Pram Christian about distraction. And this week we're having a lecture, a focus about right relationship and balance. And so we are seeking to learn how to live our lives in a different way. And the relationship, how we came upon this idea of friendship, distraction, and hardiness is the notion that friendship is a part of hardiness. And we all felt in planning this sessions like we need more hardiness to even meet these times. These times are very, very challenging. Challenging within, challenging without, continue to be more challenging. And so how do we develop the hardiness we need to even be in these times? So friendship can be a part of hardiness and help us to be more hardy. And then distraction keeps us from tending and strengthening our friendships because we're not remembering to call people and tend our relationships and spend time with people. Or distraction can help us entertain each other when we get together. So it has two sides. Distraction can also keep us from spending the time we need to strengthen our hardiness. And then friendship can fill in some of the places where we don't feel so hardy. Maybe we're vulnerable. Maybe we have some needs or some extra gaps that we need help with. And so friendship can help fill in those gaps. And then hardiness helps us meet these times. And round again to friendship helps us be more hardy. So we're in the kind of study of the relationship of these things to each other. And last week in attraction to distraction, of distraction, Pam Christian talked with us, and she really laid out how sometimes distraction is desirable and sometimes it's running us, and that it's us, that's our job to be in the driver's seat of those decisions and figure out a way for us to drive the bus of distraction and do distractions that really suit us and kind of change our relationship to distractions and maybe get in our way of friendship, hardiness, and even getting basic things done that we need to in our lives. So Mary Margaret will do the focus today on right relationship. And we invite you to really listen from what you had last week and then this week with Mary Margaret, and listen and reflect as she is speaking and see where you fit into what Mary Margaret is describing. We're going to have personal sharing after that. You know, what are you challenged by in this topic, and what are you learning, and what are you experimenting with? And what seems to work best in the roundtable discussions is that people share personal stories rather than theories. So they share personal stories of what they are living with in this topic, and then we learn from each other. So we will first invite Mary Margaret for her focus. And we are recording Mary Margaret so that you can share it with friends or invite other people to listen at another time. And then when it comes to the personal sharing, we are going to return the recording off. So please help us remember to turn it off. We kind of lose track sometimes of whether what we're doing with recording. Mary Margaret joined Women Explore in the spring of 2011, after recognizing Liz Dotson Gray's name on our brochure in the Radcliffe Library and being intrigued with our name at that time, which was Theological Opportunities Program. She grew up on Lake Ontario and in rural Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and also spent lots of time along the Chesapeake Bay and later in Maine, honing her passion for the outdoors. After graduating from Penn State in Health and Human Development and teaching high school, Mary Margaret picked up her master's degree in counseling and in education from UMass Amherst. She then worked in higher education, in career counseling for Smith and Williams, and in alumni relations and development for 25 years at Princeton, and then briefly for Rutgers Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences. Having lived in Princeton for 30 years, Mary Margaret moved to Newburyport in 2010 to pursue her beloved birds and son, Micah John, who then lived and worked in Boston. Micah now lives in Brooklyn with his wife and two sons, 4-year-old Casey and 2-year-old Sawyer, and Spencer, their dog. Mary Margaret is very committed to being with all of them as much as possible and to advocating for their future and that of planet Earth as we confront the climate crisis. She volunteers with Extinction Rebellion, Sitting for Survival, and the Friends of Parker River National Wildlife Refuge. A conservationist and keen observer of wildlife, Mary Margaret is spiritually rooted in the natural world and spends nearly every day, all day, except Thursdays, outside. So welcome, Mary Margaret.
Thank you. Thank you. Just I had a chance to listen to the recording of Dorianne's focus last week and just a little bit of Pam's talk. And then of course we've just been in reflections. And so, you'll probably find that what I'm going to say is sort of more of the same. And, we have a great shared, theme here, a shared dilemma and a shared, ways to look at what's happening and work our way through it. So. Welcome to Balancing Birding, Attraction, Distraction, and Finding Right Relationship 101. I think I'm going to start with some background. But wait, you know, I need to check my phone because I get some birding alerts. And so I need to make sure I'm not missing anything. Okay. I'm good for a little bit. First, what does right relationship mean? Here's one perspective relative to the environment. And I'm quoting from some work I found on the internet. In recent years, a number of Quaker writers and organizations have argued that their core values and the future of our planet are threatened by an economic system that encourages people to consume increasingly scarce natural resources, resulting in environmental devastation, economic inequality, and wars for oil. The alternative they propose is living in right relationship, which means radically changing both our individual behavior and social structures so that our way of life honors all of God's creation. Another way of looking at it from an indigenous perspective could simply be living in a sustainable, loving way with all living beings. I use the phrase right relationship in a broad way to think about how my choices for behavior honor what I say that I value. How am I as a birder? When and how does my attraction to birds and birding affect the rest of my life and how I live and how other people try to live? Going further, how does my birding serve as an attraction or distraction? And how does that honor the broader parts of my life and community, including my time, my space, belongings, my person, friends, tasks, commitments, attention, there's that word again, care, energies, and spirits. Again, from the internet, I'm paraphrasing, there's not one way to be right. There is only your way of moving deeply from your center, grounded in your own truth, in harmony with all that is. The concept of rightness is about bringing yourself into alignment with the flow, knowing with humility that you are no more important than any blade of grass beneath your toes. To be right with something is to move with a loving heart, guiding all your actions like the truest compass. When you are right with something, you are walking in a good way, honoring the responsibility to protect and nurture the intimate relationship that protects and nurtures you, whether that relationship is with a person, a spirit, or the earth. And of course, you have to be in right relationship with yourself. I think about all this because I realize I haven't been in right relationship with my space and by extension, the earth or myself for a couple of years. I've allowed my worries, my troubles, my grieving to pull me into myself and away from my responsibility to a loving relationship, which was to my detriment as much as that of my space, time, and friends. My home is a mess. My plants need pruning. My car needs care. My body needs repair. Likewise, I hadn't allowed my place and path to take care of me. And my soul feels like a withering plant that needs to be loved, rooted in richly composted soil and watered daily. And Women Explore certainly helps with that. So what does right relationship have to do with birds and birding? You all know that I'm a passionate bird watcher, an intense birder. Some of you have even birded with me. It's my drug of choice. Remember what Amy Banks said about dopamine? Well, birding is my dopamine for my head, my heart, and my soul. I've been birding since about 1970. When I was traveling in Nova Scotia, I got mesmerized watching a pair of red-tailed hawks feeding a killed squirrel to their young in a nest high up in a tree. I knew red tails because they were big and easily seen in Pennsylvania where I lived. My sister was a birder, which at the time, I thought kind of back in the 60s, I thought was fairly wimpy. But then, you know, I saw that hawk. Amazing. And my mother was always talking to the birds, mimicking their songs, like the white-throated sparrow singing, "Old Sam Peabody, Peabody, Peabody." So I got attracted, hooked, by learning to see and identify them, especially the big ones in the beginning, you know, the great blue herons, Canada geese, pheasants. I thought back in the 70s that only really good birders knew warblers and lots of birds. Then about 30 years ago, a friend suggested I learn the vocalizations of warblers. He said he did it on the way to work. He listened to tapes. And so I got the tapes that he recommended. And I mean, I rode my bike to work. So I would put them on at home and I would put them when I got in the car. So you got into my car and you heard birds singing. Anyway, I tried to learn the warblers first, and then I tried to learn about shorebirds, and then just as many other birds as I could. I wouldn't even know how to estimate how many songs I know now. But knowing their songs and their calls makes it easier to find birds and to identify them. And once I could do that, then that really upped the attraction for me and for searching for more and being able to name more birds. If you're counting, you'll realize that I've had a long time, like more than 50 years, to develop this hobby. Some would call it a habit, a passion, perhaps an addiction. Sometimes it is an attraction. Sometimes it's a distraction. It's all about the balance. Finding right relationship. Sometimes I get it right. Sometimes I overdo it. It is spiritual, and I prefer to think of it as part of my spiritual practice. It is the colors, the patterns, the sounds, it's magic, the migration, it's miracle. And I definitely practice. How does that osprey find his way back to the same platform every spring after wintering in South America? Susan knows the platform I'm thinking of at the Pines. That osprey's been back there, and he gets there, and then he starts building this really flimsy nest, and he just waits for his mate to arrive and get serious about the whole thing. They don't even travel together, and yet here they are, ready to create another three little ospreys that will make that same journey. You got to be deeply touched by the whole thing, as well as troubled by the huge decline in the number of birds, the insect population crashing, the habitat destruction, the pesticide poisoning, chokes me up, species extinction, the climate emergency, etc. But let's not get distracted by the crisis upon us. Well, maybe actually I should check my phone. I think I heard it buzz. Oh, now I can tell what they're seeing where I was on the refuge this morning. Guess I just have to wait. Well, what is it that attracts? Perhaps it's much like gambling. It's always different. What will I find today? I mean, I get up in the morning and I think, oh, where should I go? What will I find? Will the bird that I saw yesterday be there today? I'm probably in my fourth or fifth day checking on the blue-winged teal, and they're still there. I always wonder, you know, what will I see? How many will I see or hear? I'm getting some feedback. I don't count very much. I'm not much of a numbers birder. Often I don't count how many of each kind I see at a time. I tried to this morning just because I was going to give this talk, though I might note if there's one or several or many or more, nor do I count how many I see each day. But I did this morning, so I can tell you that I saw about 25 different species this morning, but I didn't really get out of the car. I was just car birding because I didn't have a lot of time. And I don't even really keep a good list, so I know how many species I see in a year or how many hundreds of birds are on my life list. In fact, I don't even know where my life list is. I think about getting my birds all organized so that I would know, but it doesn't happen. Perhaps it's really not in right relationship, though being overly focused on the numbers wouldn't be either. Where's the enjoyment? Where's the loving relationship? Where's the balance? Lately, my house isn't getting cleaned, nor the dishes washed daily either. The boxes of stuff from the emptied storage unit are still waiting to be evaluated. Thumbs up to keep or down, out they go. A lot of things are not happening because I'd rather go birding, especially now. The warblers are coming. The warblers are coming. I'd rather be outside. I'd rather get fresh air and exercise. I need exercise. It all seems essential to my mental, emotional, and physical health. You can see how I don't have a lot of trouble deciding what's the number one attraction. The beauty of birds and their habitats are so compelling. It's part of who I am, a keeper of Earth. I have a daily routine. I wake early. Rise and meditate, do yoga stretches, get some breakfast, and go birding. During the last 2 years, I've been coming home for hot meal lunch instead of packing one, then supposedly working on my stuff for a couple hours to clean up the mess before I go back out again for my 3-mile healthy walk. Which is either like a walking meditation or power walking, where I say my prayers, say some poetry, especially that Mary Oliver poem I often recite for you, that The Messenger. And I do a little bit of looking, but I'm primarily out there for walking. And I rationalize that. I mean, you know, is that an attraction or a distraction? I say, okay, I'm diabetic. I have eaten. I need to get out there and walk it off. And so I've got it easily justified. Of course, everything changes with the time changes and the season. During the winter, I'm more likely to keep things in balance, in right relationship. As the days lengthen, I just stretch it all out and bird longer. You see certain birds you look for at certain times of day. For example, most owls are primarily early morning or late afternoon and evening sightings. You know, whippoorwills and woodcocks, they're dusk birds. Warblers are early morning, hawks a bit later. You have to be there to see them or hear them. You can't just stay inside and you know, think about it. You really got to get out there. Birds are my friends. And I meet human friends out there birding too. During the pandemic, birds were available and attractive reasons to get out of the house, to leave those boxes and stacks of stuff for another time, such as a rainy day, which frequently doesn't materialize or provide enough time anyway. When is an attraction a grand or even mini distraction? What is right relationship? Where's the balance? There are some negative aspects to birding. For example, it's quite easy to put lots of miles on one's car and visit the gas pump frequently, even with a hybrid. Guzzling a lot of fossil fuel isn't quite the way to walk the conservation talk. Something is in wrong relationship. Another unwelcome aspect of birding is competition. And bird envy is absolutely the worst. And there's even a word for it, bird envy. And then there are the games people play for various reasons, like trying to see 100 different birds each month. Those people need the motivation to get out and go birding. I don't have that problem. After all, I embrace all of this as a spiritual practice. Makes it real easy. As you might guess, there are plenty of apps and traps to keep one even further off balance, or in my focus, out of right relationship. On eBird, did you see me look at my phone? My phone just buzzed. On eBird, which is a software site where lots of birders keep track of their sightings for free, there's a list of the top 10 birders in the area based on how many entries they submit. Thank goodness I'm not motivated to be in that list, but you can imagine what it's like for those people who want to be in that top 10 list of birders. Some folks, in order to get birds, I want you to notice how the language objectifies birds. People will say, what do you have? Or what did you get? I just had a such and such. I mean, it's very interesting to me the way that birders will talk about their objects of attraction. Some folks play tapes of the birds' songs and calls to bring a bird into visibility, which happens, of course, when the bird hears it and comes to see who's there and to fight off the supposed intruder. Imagine if bird had to listen to a zillion tapes a day because everybody wants to see it, and they get there and they play the tape to try to bring the bird in. Real hard one. For me, that tips the balance of right relationship, especially if it is part of someone's regular routine practice. There are apps that identify bird songs and calls, making it easy to tip the balance again. I mean, you just put the phone up there and the phone will tell you what it is. Pretty soon or maybe there already are, you know, binoculars, and I bet it'll tell you what you're seeing. The latest tool is what I call GroupMe. There's an app which uses a kind of listserv idea to alert all the folks who've signed up for free to receive news of sightings of rare birds. Information which used to take hours or days to circulate via private mentoring relationships or phone calls now is passed along in minutes or seconds maybe to large numbers of people. For example, I receive alerts from the Plum Island group, the Essex County group, and what I call the rest of Massachusetts group. So I can be sitting here and I know what's being, you know, the rare birds that are being seen in any of those places. And then I can, get to decide whether I stay here and finish my focus or have to run out the door to go get the bird. Anyway, I generally keep my phone on vibrate so that I can be aware of rare sightings and change birding plans. I could also sign up for hourly or daily alerts directly from eBird from all over the place, Maine, Brooklyn, the location maybe of an upcoming trip I'm going to take, anywhere in the U.S., and then I could, you know, fly to go see them, or abroad. I don't do that because I think that would really be distracting. Just like, here's my distraction birding, and then I've got the distractions of the distraction. Anyway, I'm not ready to be that far out of right relationship yet. It's all a slippery slope, and one must constantly monitor a right relationship and feel it. I could check my phone now, but I think I'm okay. Birding is usually very good for immersing oneself in the search and learning to be present. However, being present takes on a false presence with all the electronic signals. How can one be present? How could that be right relationship? I can really lose myself in birding, but sometimes with all the distractions, it's kind of like being on a dance floor and looking over your partner's shoulder for your next potential partner. So you're not really there with that bird. It's, you know, where am I going to go next, or what's going to be, and what am I missing? And, I think that's not good for my brain. The piece that really troubles me personally about coming into right relationship with birding is that in January 21, I emptied my storage unit into my 3-room condo. And the condo was already beyond capacity after moving from my 4-floor duplex in New Jersey 12 years ago. Feeling proud of dumping the idea of paying for a storage unit, I vowed to distribute and donate all the extra stuff by the end of last spring. It didn't happen. By the end of the year, it still hadn't happened. On and on. It's very slowly happening now. But I'm not always motivated. And the attraction of birding provides a wonderful distraction, so I don't work on the stuff. And again, I see it's a very slippery slope. Oh, and did I mention I've also been tending a broken heart for 2 years, and without the dopamine of that special relationship that Amy talked about, I've built the attraction of birding and dopamine into a total distraction. So I'm struggling hard to get the birding and the friendship each into right relationship, along with the stuff. I don't want to be obsessed about the stuff, but I would like to enjoy my home again, invite friends over, be pleased with my space and special belongings, and not feel bad, sad, guilty, or a failure. I think Dorianne said some of those exact same things last week. If I can get to be 77 in another month or two, I ought to be able to get into right relationship with my stuff, my passion, with earth, and my spiritual path. But let me check the phone. Oh, I'm okay. American coot, double-crested cormorant. They're okay. I saw them this morning. To close, here's another quote I liked. As I've tried to bring things into right relationship, I feel my heart and my spirit expand like a tender seedling pushing its face up to the warmth of the sun after a cold, dark winter. I am reminded again that being in right relationship with place, the earth, with the spirits of the earth, and by extension with ourselves is a crucial part of our mental, physical, and spiritual health. If, like me, you've done that human thing and forgotten or have gotten distracted for a bit, I invite you now to return to that loving embrace. And if you've never had the kind of relationship with a particular place or activity like birding, why not develop it now? You don't have to be a super birder or live in a huge farm. The movement of our world also happens in our backyards, at the local park, or even in an apartment window box. Pay attention to the world around you. Fall in love with it where you're at. One leaf, one worm, one bird at a time. And offer up your heart in love, in honor, in gratitude. That, my friends, would be enough. A world filled with right relationship. And I don't know about you, but that's the world I want to live in. So thank you.
Thank you, Mary Margaret. It's wonderful to walk in your shoes and in your thinking and in your experience and in your questions so honestly. So thank you so much. So let's take a deep breath, and we're going to carry Mary Margaret's talk with us. And we're also, and so of course there's time if you want to ask Mary Margaret questions as part of our round table. And Dorianne is still here too, so we can ask her questions. And then to